Welcome to the EAJKD podcast series. In this podcast, Dr. John Gill from the University of British Columbia will be discussing his AJKD article entitled Incidence and Consequences of Acute Kidney Injury in Kidney Transplant Recipients with Dr. Kelly Calderon, EAJKD Advisory Board Member.
I think it's a really interesting article because, as you point out early in the manuscript, that there is very limited data looking at the frequency and the consequences of acute kidney injury in transplant patients. Even in CKD, there's not a ton. But it sounds like in your study you were limited by looking just at Medicare patients from the nature of the data that you were reviewing and also inpatient hospitalizations.
Correct.
Specific to transplant patients, because, you know, we know they're a very distinct population, how do you think this may have affected the study population that you were able to obtain?
So if we look at who's, you know, included in the study and excluded in the study, the bulk of the patients, so the ascertainment of AKI in this analysis is in the first 3 years while people who are Medicare insured retain Medicare insurance. So the two limitations, you know, in terms of the population, you know, the bulk of the patients who get a transplant in the United States are in fact Medicare covered. And so I don't really have a big problem with the patient group being representative of the U.S. transplant population, but I think the confining feature really is the first 3 years after transplantation. You know, when you think about the life of a transplant patient, there's a lot going on certainly in the first year with a lot of, you know, medication changes, people getting acclimatized to having a new functioning kidney, and so there's large changes in volume and so forth that can certainly be at play. And then, you know, when you get the further you get out post-transplant, the other issue is that your baseline level of kidney function decreases. And so what I think is probably, I feel at least, one of the most confining features in terms of generalizability is sort of what happens after that three-year window. So I think we need more studies to see, you know, to what extent the patterns that we saw persist after the three-year period. You know, I think the other issue there that is probably a segue to the next issue is just the ascertainment of AKI in this study. It's done by claims data, and this sort of the defining feature here, as opposed to studies that have used the exact same methodology in a CKD population, is the need to exclude acute kidney injury that's due to rejection, that's due to, you know, sepsis or whatever else. The reason I bring that up here is that we know that rejection is most common in the first year after transplantation, but then it certainly decreases in incidence over time. And so to what extent our ascertainment of AKI is still, you know, misclassifying some acute rejection episodes, I think, is debatable. There's no way that I can address that. But if you saw the same patterns persisting out, you know, in a longer-term prevalent transplant population, I think you could be perhaps even more confident that we had successfully excluded, you know, acute rejection as part of the definition of AKI in this study.
How did you choose 3 years as your study period to look at?
Because we're limited to claims data, right? So, you know, Medicare funding for transplant patients, ESRD Medicare coverage, unfortunately runs out 3 years after the time of transplantation. So for me to be able to ascertain these events from claims data, you know, and that's fairly standard in any transplant study that uses Medicare claims to be confined to the first 3 years after the transplant.
Since you were using Medicare claims, would it have been possible to look at outpatient diagnosis to make sure, I mean, because a lot of transplant physicians will manage some AKI as an outpatient?
We speak to that in the paper. I think one of the other unique issues about this population is, unlike other studies that, again, have used very similar methodology in the CKD population, the transplant group is really, you can think of them as sort of a connected group of patients who have longitudinal outpatient care established, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you may see a patient that you're following in your transplant clinic, and you may say, you may find acute kidney injury in, you know, that happens in that case, but it's not so severe that it's going to require dialysis, and you kind of figure out what the contributing factors are, and you make a decision in conjunction with the patient after assessing the safety, et cetera, to simply follow them as an outpatient. Whereas if that same level of change of kidney function had happened in somebody who you'd never seen before and was just referred to your office or whatever, that person might get admitted to the hospital to try and figure out what's happening to them. And I think it speaks to the issue that the transplant transplant population is, that's one of the other major issues that differentiates them from these types of studies that have been done in the general CKD population, whereby the ability to follow these people in an outpatient setting might be greater. So what I'm suggesting is had we included outpatient claims, we might have got perhaps a magnitude higher incidence of AKI and perhaps less severe AKI events. And I think that is something that, you know, certainly could be considered in a further analysis. To be honest with you, you know, the reason we confined it to the inpatient situation is, you know, one of our major stumbling blocks with this methodology was to get people to buy into our method of ascertaining AKI. And so we wanted to basically duplicate what had been done in other studies. So we tried to use the exact same methodology and not deviate too far from that as had been done in other publications.
The other sentence that I had a question about was you stated that the acute kidney injury claims, if a patient had two within 1 year post-transplant year, then only one incident was included. Is that right?
No, I think it's in relation to the rejection episode. So this is, again, an effort to just try and make sure as much as possible that we're not misclassifying acute rejection events as acute kidney injury events. So we kicked out any claim for acute kidney injury that was within 12 months of a recorded episode of acute rejection.
So to clarify, if a patient had an AKI episode in say, the first 3 months of a calendar year post-transplant and then again was coded, say, between the 6 and the 12-month time period,
it would be
counted twice. Okay.
It would be counted, yeah. And, in fact, many patients had multiple AKI events in here.
Yeah, you've got from a large population of patients that you looked at, over 27,000 patients, that's a lot of data to go through. What were you surprised by after you analyzed the results compared to what you already knew about the non-transplant population?
Although the incidence of AKI is higher here, there are limitations in trying to directly compare the incidence here to that in other studies. And some of the issues that I don't know if we directly comment on here is by virtue of having a transplant, you know, you can imagine that this is something that's coded. And so although I am struck by the difference in the incidence, the higher incidence that occurs here as opposed to in some of the other studies, I think we do have to acknowledge that there could be an ascertainment bias, right? Just by virtue of being a transplant patient, someone may be more inclined to call your increase in serum creatinine when you get admitted to hospital as being acute kidney injury as if you weren't a transplant patient. Having said that, these results were consistent when we only looked at dialysis requiring acute kidney injury. So the main thing that I think here is that to fully understand, and I mean, this will be the first study that uses claims data, I think what we really need is for people to do actually prospective data collection on this where you can sort of get a better feel for what's going on here. So, but I think the incidence is striking and the fact that, you know, once you get one of these events, its impact in terms of its association with, you know, graft loss is quite significant and on par with some of the other heavy insults that, you know, we consider in transplant medicine, you know, like acute rejection in terms of the magnitude of its effect. So I think that those are probably, to me, some of the most important things.
Actually, I have that part of your manuscript highlighted to note to remember to talk about because that was personally my take-home point from the article. But realizing that you're also limited by word count, is there anything else that you'd just like to offer about the article, anything you couldn't include? The point, it's actually like the first line on page 15 is the identification of CKD stage as the most important risk factor for AKI in transplant patients.
I think that's the other, you know, important aspect of this is, as you probably know, the adoption of the CKD classification and its utility in the transplant setting, you know, is an evolving field. It hasn't necessarily permeated into the minds of transplant physicians like it has general nephrologists and even general internists. And I think that getting people to understand the value of classifying patients using the CKD classification just so that, you know, you can identify patients at different levels of risk for whatever outcome, I think this study does also illustrate the importance of applying that classification in the transplant setting. So it helps you identify groups of transplant recipients who are at higher risk. And so I think that that is another aspect that perhaps isn't as strongly stated in the manuscript currently.
This concludes this EAJKD podcast. Please visit eajkd.org for more information on Dr. Gill's AJKD article. Thanks for listening.